Live from Aspen Public Radio, I'm Allison Bektesh. This is Valley Roundup. Joining me today in the studio are Aspen Times Managing Editor Rick Carroll. Hi, Rick.
Hello. How are y'all doing?
And Aspen Public Radio's Wyatt Orm. Wyatt, thanks for joining me.
I'm so glad to be here.
A little later this hour, we'll be checking in with Aspen Daily News columnist Mick Ireland. Stay with us. All right, Rick, I don't think we've had you, first of all, on the live show yet, so this is exciting. Thanks so much. Anything could happen.
Great.
but also, since you've kind of readjusted your role over at the Aspen Times, you're now primarily the business correspondent. So I think that had been sprinkled into your role, among many other things, for some time. And it seems like there's enough going on that we want a full-time concentration on the business world.
Yeah, that's right. We've been able to, finally, it's taken a while to get all the right pieces in place with a pretty solid staff. And so before this, I'd been covering City Hall, but not to the degree that it needs to be covered. It needs full-time attention, and we brought Carolyn Zachariasen on, who is now able to cover that and the Housing Authority and all things city-related. And then that puts me with more of a focus on business, which is more or less my strength in reporting. So I'm enjoying it.
I'm enjoying the stories that you have come out of it already, and we'll talk about those in a minute. But I'm wondering, you know, if there's anything overall broadly unique to our business community. Like, why have a full-time person just for that? Are everything else about the Valley is unique and has its own quirks? What is it about the business world that needs more attention?
Well, that's a good question. And I'm not just restricted to business. I mean, I'll cover a high school football game if they need me to. Everything is business when you think about it. Retail, real estate, the ski industry, even decisions made at the government level, there's a lot of crossover into business. You know, the tourism, it could go on and on, but business is just connected to so many things we cover.
Were there things that were just falling through the cracks?
Well, in terms of business coverage, yeah. I think that there's a lot that's not covered out there mm-hmm. that needs more attention. And civil courts is a great place for business, bankruptcies and all of that. So there's, I just think a set of eyes that's really focused on that, as well as on City Hall and APSHA and our county government, which Jason covers, and Scott Condon Down Valley. We just have all the pieces in place now.
Perfect. So it does allow you to tell stories like Aspen Constructors bankruptcy story that ran mm-hmm. on Monday.
Right.
And first of all, will you just refresh us as to what kind of the overall story was?
Well, and I'll back up real quick. We started Business Monday 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
And so we'll have our third week this coming Monday. And it's just a simple page with a main anchor story. What's the big deal? Say what you want about that.
Which is fascinating.
Yeah.
I look at that every
week.
Yeah,
there's a little voyeurism in there. And then the business briefs as well. So for this Monday, I'm writing about the St. Regis IPO.
Oh, great.
Which actually is online right now if you want to go there. But back to your story or your question about Aspen Constructors. What was the question again?
Well, give us the kind of the overall plot if any of the listeners didn't hear it, and then I have several questions.
Oh, it was a pretty straightforward story about a long established Aspen business. I think they've been around since 1988, and how they basically have declared Chapter 11 bankruptcy due to a arbiter's ruling. Not in their favor for more than $1 million. And I think the most interesting part of that is that $700,000 plus they're on the hook for attorney's fees. And so in order to
just so much
keep,
more
keep
than
their
the
business going,
fine,
yeah, they have to protect themselves and sort out this mess because there's one or two cases in Pitkin County District Court related to this bankruptcy. So it's a bit of a yarn. So,
and it seems so difficult. I mean, it was such a human story. I don't know the business, but it mm-hmm. felt very human to me, whether you are sympathetic toward the business or not. Mm-hmm. But you had to go through all these very heavy court documents and mm-hmm. Kind of surmise some things because they wouldn't, not all
right.
the players would talk to you. So that's the kind of like intense reporting that goes into this.
Yeah. And thanks. I mean, it's a human story, but no humans were interviewed
right.
because no one would talk. So, yeah, you're kind of left to your own devices to try to understand this, but I feel like I've been covering courts for long enough to where I can understand it. But boy, it sure does help when lawyers or key people talk to you to even help you understand it better. I mean, most reporters, unless they're with the Wall Street Journal or Barron's, they don't have law degrees.
Totally.
So you have to sift through this and connect the dots, and it can be time consuming, but it's worth it if you get a little story like this. So.
Were you just picking through court documents for the entirety of the story?
Doing my weekly, I troll for bankruptcies. And I found the bankruptcy.
I hope
on
that's
them.
On your business card.
Yeah, and
or at least on your resume.
Yeah, and then the bankruptcy led, and it mentioned the main creditor was West Hallam, and I remember West Hallam had a case in Pickens County District Court, and I just linked them together.
All right, wonderful.
So.
And it does seem like that's going to be one of the hardest things about business, whereas public, if you're covering the public, you can ask any document. We all deserve to see what's going mm-hmm. on in government, right? But
right.
a business has no obligation to tell you if they're doing well, what their sales are like, who, like the,
right.
the demographic they're
not
really
if
the, trying.
Not if they're public. I mean, and that's what makes Ski Company, you can, it's a business that you can cover the recreational side with a lot of ease, though you still have to be a good storyteller, but the business side, you don't have any access to their records at all, and there's no reason for them to provide it to us. So, but decisions made by Ski Co. have the same impact on the community as by our local government. And so Scott Condon covers Ski Co. still as a business, but it's not the easiest one to cover. I mean, even when Colorado Ski Country USA comes out with their skier numbers, well, Ski Co. will provide those for their resorts, but you don't get to find out what their past sales are like, how much money they generate in revenue, what their F&B makes, and so on. So,
and some of that is they don't want the competitors reading your story, essentially.
Right. Yeah. They want to keep that to themselves, and with good reason, but if we're doing our job, sometimes we can uncover what they're doing. So
there'll be a Business Monday story every Monday.
Every Monday, correct.
Okay, wonderful. Mm-hmm. You also get a start now putting a very big magnifying glass on such a fun industry, the pot industry, relatively new to Colorado. And you had two stories this week. One, it turns out that the pot industry is actually more lucrative than the liquor industry.
Right, that's crazy, isn't it? I mean, the city came out with a sales tax report this week, and the two numbers that popped out were the liquor stores and pot stores. And so instead of just doing a story about overall business in town, we thought that was should be the focus. And what are we, 3 or 4 years of legalization, and pot stores are outselling liquor stores? That's pretty incredible.
And those were the top two. So pot is actually at the top for tax revenue, or
for
retail revenue?
Well, they're not. It's lodging accommodations account for most of it, but we just compared pot to liquor stores
and just recreation.
Excuse me, cannabis.
Matt Kine listening.
Right. And so
just recreational.
It was
cannabis,
recreation
and medical. Okay, both of them. Yeah. Still, though, it's impressive.
Yeah, 11.5 last year, I believe.
And I love your opening line, so I'm going to read that.
Okay.
There was plenty of green to go around among Aspen's marijuana dispensaries in 2017, and more than enough to top liquor stores in revenue. Just brilliant writing, and
so I have
to get that out on the radio. But I also want to ask you about kind of reporting on this, because you spoke to a guy, Matt Kind, who has the Canna Insider podcast.
Correct.
And I want to read a quote from him. Explaining why maybe marijuana sales did better in Aspen than liquor. He says, one in particular is when people are visiting Aspen and adjusting to the high altitude, some don't drink for the first couple of days. I think people are looking for something different than alcohol, which is essentially poison.
And he did follow that by saying, but I'm not judging people who use alcohol.
Right.
I mean, that's what he said. I don't know people who come. I mean, when my family comes here the first few days, they have no problem drinking alcohol that first day. But maybe Matt Kine's friends are different.
Really quick, before our first break, you also did a story. There's a Snowmass Village man who's actually on the lam. Has he been caught? He was trying to, you know, with an industry that's this new, you can kind of try these new tricks. And he was trying to be the first point of contact as if he was a company that's doing well.
Correct.
And take off their, siphon off their sales.
With his former business partners, okay. He uses the same name and started billing clients that actually weren't his. And so he's been held, and he was sued last August, I believe, or April, I can't remember. And the court issued a temporary restraining order saying you cannot do this anymore, but he's been held in contempt twice for doing it since that litigation started. And they've been trying to serve him with papers to get him into court to address the contempt. And he's MIA.
Still missing. All mm-hmm. right. You're listening to Valley Roundup live from Aspen Public Radio. I'm Allison Bechtesh. Putting things in perspective for us today are Rick Carroll and Wyatt Orm. We'll be back in a moment. Thanks so much for tuning into Valley Roundup. Wyatt, RAFTA got results of a survey back testing the waters for new property tax this week. You sat in on that whole meeting, and I want that insider perspective. So tell us this survey results in the nutshell, and what were they asking people? What were they trying to find out?
So what they were basically trying to find out was how copacetic people are for a new property tax that would basically help fund RAFTA. Transportation money statewide is going down, and RAFTA does quite a community service, but it can't do it without any money. And so the survey was basically in late January, a consultant who does polling reached out to 300 or so likely voters. So not people who are not like a sample of the registered voters, but of people who are most likely to vote in an off year election.
They can go back and see their records and see this person always shows up on our off.
Right.
And person got the call.
Right. And that's important because the electorate in an off year election is usually a bit older mm-hmm. than during a presidential year. And so they basically called people up and down the valley to just see, would you vote for this? Would you vote yes, no? And if so, why? The results aren't the overall message was this property tax could pass, but it needs some legwork. There okay. needs to be some consistent, strong messaging. And the kind of the nitty gritty of the survey results are it's a lot of stuff that you might expect, like, for example, the public transportation is kind of is thought of most favorably by younger people who often vote Democrats, Democratic, older Republicans are less inclined to want to pay a tax mm. in order for RAFTA to get funding. Aspen, Basalt, Carbondale, all are sort of in support of a mill levy for RAFTA. It's actually strongest in Carbondale. In Glenwood Springs, it's kind of like a dead. It's in
wow.
it's like a dead heat. Yes
okay.
and no. And then when you get down to Newcastle, it's a pretty strong. It's a pretty strong no.
Wow.
So yeah, I mean, it's like in that respect, it kind of reinforced a lot of, I guess, like stereotypes we have already about political affiliations throughout the valley. But
each community has a representative on that Roaring Fork Transportation Authority board, right?
Where yeah.
is the whole board in support? Like, would the people in Newcastle's representatives, are they a champion or are they even against it?
This is a good question. It seemed to me that everyone is interested. I mean, everyone sees the value in RAFTA okay. and that's reflected in the survey results too. Like I have a bunch of stuff in front of me, but basically, not only, it seems like people who are Democrats seem to really appreciate RAFTA, but Republicans do as well. Like
okay.
everyone thinks that there is value in public transportation. Everyone thinks, I shouldn't say everyone, but for the most part, there's sort of broad support for public transportation. There's sort of a broad consensus that traffic is bad and that no one likes traffic. I think that where you get where you get the problem. The problem is where you, how you fund.
I see. We all like RAFTA. Not all of us want to pay taxes in order to fund it.
Right.
So we don't know if this will be a ballot measure yet or not. What would, if it does go on the ballot, how would RAFTA get a win?
Yeah. I mean, I think that one thing was really clear from the meeting. They were like, all the different RAFTA representatives need to be unified in wanting this ballot measure, you know, wanting a mill levy to get passed. So, but I think that, you know, the question was whether or not, like, will the messaging in Aspen work also in Newcastle? So that's where it gets a little more complicated. And there was kind of an interesting back, it wasn't really a back and forth, but Aspen Mayor Steve Skadron said, you know, there are a lot of people who were polled who are really reluctant to a new tax. And so do we even try to get those people on board if they're just vehemently against taxes? And the Glenwood Springs mayor, Mike Gamba, came back and said, well, you know, maybe we could try and get those people on board if we show them what the economic impact that RAFTA has on the valley on the whole. You know, if people are voting with their pocketbooks, then like what where would we be without RAFTA? Okay. What would the toll be on our infrastructure? What would if we all just drove our cars every day, what would the economic impact be? And so it seems to me like the messaging is going to be an interesting, I'm very curious to see how it goes, like how they decide to sell a potential property tax in Aspen versus Newcastle. Like who do they appeal to? How do they kind of like try and win them over?
And there are like specific amounts that they are calculating. So what would the tax be?
Right. So there's kind of an option, but and these are mill levies, and mill levies are complicated. But the survey respondents were asked, about a 5 mill levy or a 3, and that the difference is basically between $36 per $100,000 of assessed property value, or $22 per $100,000 of assessed property value. And it does seem like it was interesting. There was like male Democrats were like, I'll do whatever you want.
Okay.
I'll do 5 mils. there was, as you might expect, there's like more price sensitivity. You know, when people were given a choice between 5 mils and 3 mils, they're like, we'll take 3 mils.
Right.
So that's what got more people interested. That's what got more people to say maybe they would vote yes on a property tax.
Did they differentiate between people likely to vote who were property owners and people likely to vote who weren't? Because I would say, like, anyone who's not a property owner, it's way easier to say yes if this literally doesn't affect your pocketbook.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, there definitely is data in the survey that suggests that typically people who own property that's valued over $800,000 to $1 million, they're sort of a little less interested in forking over that money.
Wow.
Whereas, you know, people who own property that's $200,000 or less, they seem kind of more interested, and there's kind of a lot of data in between those two points. But it seems, I guess it wasn't surprising to me that it's really the enthusiasm is really strongest in somewhere like Carbondale, and in Aspen there's enthusiasm, but it doesn't match that of Carbondale.
And of course, in Aspen and Snowmass, all those rides are subsidized anyway. You know, there's no alternative,
right,
of like, well, this costs me.
Yeah.
I'm just not feeling it. Whereas the people who are using RAFTA in Carbondale are paying every time they step on the bus.
That's true.
Totally different experience.
And that's a good point. And it reminds me that, you know, there was one thing from the survey results was that pretty much everyone is like, whatever we do, let's just make sure that we don't charge, you know, more for fares.
Oh, interesting.
And let's make sure that seniors can keep riding for free. So that seems like a really high priority.
I'm Allison Bechtesh. You're listening to Valley Roundup on Aspen Public Radio. Thanks so much to Rick Carroll and Wyatt Orm for being part of the show today. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
A little earlier today, I caught up with Aspen Daily News columnist Mick Ireland to chat about the front page story on the potential review of the way Aspen Pickens County Housing Authority is governed. Should Pickens County and Aspen both oversee the program? Our conversation is coming up next. Stay with us. Again, you're tuning into Valley Roundup. I'm Allison Bechtesh. Thanks for listening. Here with me is Aspen Daily News columnist Mick Ireland. Mick, thanks so much for joining me today.
Glad to be here.
Along with being a columnist and involved in many other ways in the community, you've been on the county commissioners, Aspen City Council, and mayor of Aspen. So I think you are in a prime position to answer my question. Does APSHA's governance system work?
It works, but not as well as it could.
Okay. What are your thoughts on this this article that came out today saying Adam Frisch is looking at maybe dissolving the way that the county and the city partner together to govern our housing authority?
Well, I'm pretty familiar with the intergovernmental agreements over the years, and there are always these sort of awkward, rickety structures because there's not unified command. And part of the problem is there isn't a consensus about what should be done. And so governance usually shows up when there's a fundamental policy problem, not a structural problem.
Okay. Do you have ideas of what might be a better setup?
I think the county commissioners and the city need to spend more time together working out what their mutual objectives are and what are separate. They presently meet four times a year.
Yeah, for a couple hours.
For a couple hours. That's 8 hours. And it should be more than that. There should be more cooperation. The city, surprisingly enough, is actually part of Pickens County. And it should be viewed that way, not as the county and then the city. So there needs to be more. They need to have some sort of housing retreat among themselves so they can decide who does what and where we should do it. And right now it's not working that way.
So I'm so pleased to have you here. Aspen Public Radio had a housing forum this week. We're talking a lot about what could be done with housing in the Valley. Recently, in the last couple weeks, many of your columns have had something to do with housing in one way or the other because so many things are attached. Even things like tipping in the restaurant industry and population growth and what might happen there. I just want your take on really the future of housing, especially when it comes to population. You had a point about residences and how they play in.
Well, I've been doing this a long time, going back to when I chaired the AACP Housing Subcommittee in 1993. And some things have changed, but a lot has not. And the role of housing has increasingly been to hold together a community when much of the residential stock is becoming either VRBO or second, third, fourth home. And that's always been a challenge, and it is more so today. A majority of your single-family homes now, they're about 1,100, are owned out of state. So that part of the community, that core part that produces so many volunteers and leaders and doers and makers and shakers, is dwindling. The rest of the housing program is very challenged because the ability to have a family is going away. If you look at, and I've done this, if you look at how many children are born in Aspen, for example, it's a smaller and smaller percentage of the population. It is not zero population growth, it's negative population growth.
Wow.
And the only thing that keeps Aspen from actually losing population in the way that reminds you of Detroit is we have had annexations, and we have in-migration of people who want to come here and bring their kids and put them in school.
I have a question about that regeneration of population. It does seem like a lot of people have about 3 good years where they will try and make it work in Aspen. Do we have to mitigate for community? Won't people always come and try and live in Aspen over and over again? Like, will businesses ever be hurt by the fact that we don't have good housing?
Well, in the short run, no. In the long run, yes. That the economic product that you offer here is different from Vail or Breckenridge or anywhere else, not because it's necessarily more veil than veil is, but because it's characteristically different. And that is, when people come here, they will talk to you on the chairlift about you not knowing that you're the mayor or any of that stuff, about how it feels like a real community. And they very much like that. And people are willing to pay more for that sense that they're here in a community as opposed to a theme park. And if I love to ski Copper Mountain and Vail and all those places, but at the end of the day, they're empty. Mm-hmm. All of downtown Vail, all those big buildings you see that is supposedly going to engender vitality, they're vacant. There are about 200 people in that entire stretch that you see along the road, 200, and declining.
Wow.
So what you are offering is a niche product. You come to Aspen and you're part of something that's very different from lots of big buildings and grooming and snowmaking and gondolas. Everybody does that. Aspen does something a little more. You've got a music festival. You've got an arts community. You've got locals who live here and, you know, who care about it and who show up for housing forums. And, you know, you have two newspapers and a radio station. They're both very active. And that's not true in a lot of resorts. They're just, if you've ever been to Disney World or Disneyland, everybody goes home at the end of the day.
Mm.
That's not true here. And the stake is much different if it's somewhere you're 6 weeks or 3 months a year, as opposed to somewhere you care whether the buses work because you're going to use them. And you care whether there's a City Market or a Clark's. Those things matter to you as a resident that they don't matter when you're on vacation. I think you get the difference.
So in order to achieve community, do we build?
Well, there's two things that you have to consider. First, the old saying, if there's anything people hate more than density, it's sprawl. So this community is not about to build housing on dedicated open space. Vacant land is not open space.
Right.
And people try to make it that, but it's not. People do not want six-story buildings. They did, as the critics say, move away from it. Vail has districts within the downtown where there's a minimum height of like 72 feet. Now that has not...
A minimum height.
That has not, at Lion's Head, has not injected vitality into the community. You can build a six-story building and you can fill it with dollar-denominated assets, that is to say, third homes or something of that sort. You can do that. But it isn't the same as vitality. It doesn't solve the problem. And I think Adam Frisch is one of those who has said, you can add 1,000 units tomorrow morning. They're not going to be affordable. The price is, that's not going to drive the price down. The average price might go from 3.4 to 3.2 million, but you won't have created community. And places that have built unlimited units like Vail and some other ski areas have not solved the problem.
So how do we solve the problem?
Well, I think you have to recognize a relationship between job growth and housing demand. So if you continue to do things that allow more jobs to be created, then you're going to have a housing shortage. And Bert Myron talks about this, and I think he's right. There's a relationship there, and you have to consider that carefully when you're approving something. And we don't have the opportunity to simply build down the valley the way they do in the Eagle Valley. You know, we don't have a .0. We don't have a gypsum. That's not going to work. And finally, as you see the conversion of local residences to second home or VRBO uses, that puts upward pressure on labor demand because you're creating more economic engines every time a legacy family retires and somebody from California buys the house and is here 3 months a year. That new resident isn't here to mow the lawn and do the windows and work spare time as a lift operator. That's not the point of amassing money, and people don't do that.
Aspen Daily News columnist Mick Ireland. Mick, thank you so much for being here today.
And well, it's a pleasure to listen to this radio station all the time.
You've You've been listening to Valley Roundup live on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Allison Bechtesh. Thanks to Rick Carroll of the Aspen Times, Wyatt Orm, reporter here at Aspen Public Radio, and Mick Ireland, columnist with the Aspen Daily News. You can get a rundown of links and more information on the stories covered on the show on our website, aspenpublicradio.org. Valley Roundup is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.